So welcome to our teleseminar on conflict resolution at school and at home. And my guest tonight is Judy Accardi, and I'm going to introduce you in just a couple minutes, Judy, so that people who are just signing on don't miss that. What I'm going to do for about 3 minutes is to just tell people a little bit about Hand in Hand, and then we'll get going. So my name is Patty Whipfler, and I'm a mother of two sons and three grandchildren I have now. And I started Hand in Hand about 23 years ago. And what we do is we provide resources, training, and lots of support for parents using a parenting approach that we call parenting by connection. And what we're trying to do is support parents to deliver the love that they have and the care that they have and the wisdom that they've collected to their children in really good ways. We know that parents work really, really hard. We know that the work of nurturing children is actually very complex work, and that work changes from day to day and from week to week and from month to month and certainly from year to year, and that our children keep bringing up situations that we've never been in before. Or if we've been in them, the things that other people did in those situations are not what we want to be doing. We want to do something different, something that reflects more of our love or more of our caring or more of our thinking about how we want to be in the world. But it's not always clear how to do that. Mostly, you know, I think we have examples around us of things that are not what we want to do. And so how to approach our children with love and limits and caring and tolerance but not permissiveness is a mystery to us several times a day, every day. And Parenting by Connection gives parents what we call listening tools that help parents build good support for the work of parenting for themselves, so that when they're mystified or upset by their children's behavior, they have a place to go to think about it, to work on the feelings and the reactions that they find themselves having, and then are able to go back in kind of refreshed and, I don't know, just able to navigate difficult situations with a little more presence of mind because they had someone they could talk to, someone they could blow up with, someone they could tell their worries to and show their feelings to. It really helps us to have some kind of emotional support for the very emotional work of parenting. So we offer tools for parents, including tools to build support for ourselves. And so how we deliver what we have is through booklets that we sell online, through free articles and our blog and our discussion group, all of which are focused on parenting by connection, and through classes and self-guided courses and trainings, and I don't know, we've got lots of ways to interact with us, everything from free and momentary to a training session that teaches you how to teach parenting by connection that lasts 10 months. And what we hope to do is to build support for parents, to show parents how to use support from us and how to build support in their lives for themselves, and we hope to build relationships with you that are helpful to you. That's really why we're here, is to be helpful to you. So we're glad you're here, and now I want to introduce Judy. Judy Accardi has been working with Play Mountain Place for over 30 years, and Play Mountain Place is a humanistic alternative preschool and an elementary school in Los Angeles. It is a wonderful place. I've had the privilege of visiting several times, and children really get to learn through play there and learn through the relationships that they have. It's with each other and with their teachers. It's just a great learning environment, really designed to be exactly what young people are built for. And it was started in 1949 by Phyllis Fleischman. And Judy's been a teacher there, a parent educator there, a board member there. She was co-director, and she's been the director for Play Mountain Place for the last 13 years. And her professional career in all has been dedicated to working with children and families in ways that foster respectful communication and authentic relationships. And she's a licensed clinical psychologist and has a part-time practice in Santa Monica, California. So welcome, Judy. I'm so happy that you could be with us and share your experience and wisdom with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much, Patty. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. It's really an honor to work together with you and with Hand in Hand, Play Mountain and Hand in Hand. Our values are very aligned, and our approach to working with children is very much in alignment. So it's really an honor to do this with you. And I thank you to all the parents and other interested people who are joining us tonight. I hope you can find some benefit in what we talk about. So tonight, should I just start, Patty?
Let people know the structure of the call. Judy's going to talk about conflict resolution and give you what she thinks are the sort of the most important points to be thinking about when you're doing this with young people. I'm going to follow and give a few thoughts of my own. And we're hoping to save the last 20 minutes of the call or so for questions. And so at that point in the call, I'll let you know how you can let me know that you have a question, and I will call on some of you who have questions. There's no way probably that we can get to all of you, but we'll see whether we can illuminate some points for some parents that are helpful to everybody who's here. So go right ahead, Judy.
Okay, thanks. Well, so tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about conflict resolution both at school and at home. And I want to start with school. At Play Mountain, children have a tremendous amount of freedom. They have a choice about what they do during the day. They're free to move as much as they want to, and they're very free to express their feelings, the full range of their feelings and the full intensity of their feelings. So our teachers are supporting them in their feelings expression, helping them express things in safe ways, supporting their social interactions and their relationships. Their friendship dynamics are very important to us, and their relationships with us. So it's a very child-directed program. And as a result, there are lots of feelings being expressed, lots of interactions, and lots of conflict. And for us, conflict is a very normal experience. It's a normal result of people being in relationship with each other. We don't judge the children about their problems. We don't try to shut them down or punish them for having problems. We normalize it, and we help them find ways to work through it. The model that we use for conflict resolution is a non-authoritarian model, and it's really about strengthening relationships between people, helping those relationships be very genuine and authentic, and helping build some peacemaking skills. We really see a very, very deep value and a lot of growth in people being able to experience how to move through conflict and how to move through intense feelings in safe ways within relationships. And we think it's important for kids to learn how to know their own feelings and how to safely express them. And this model of conflict resolution works very well, especially when feelings are very heightened. To put it very simply, the conflict resolution process is a process of clarifying people's needs and feelings and what the problem is between them, and then helping them come to a solution that comes from everyone in the problem and that satisfies everyone in the problem, or at least a solution that everyone can agree to. So we're looking for win-win solutions and not solutions that come out of voting or one person, you know, having more say than another. And the tools that we use are listening skills and limit-setting skills, especially I messages, respectful limit-setting and listening. And that includes passive listening, reflective listening, but listening for feelings. That's what we're trying to do. So at school, when conflicts come up, the role of the teacher is a mediator, facilitator role. So I'll give an example of two children, maybe about 4 years old, because there are a lot of problems in the 4-year-old yard. They both want the same swing. They both get to it at the same time. I had this swing before. I had it. I saved it. No, you didn't. Nobody was here. I just grabbed the swing. It's my turn to swing. And the problem starts from there. And then maybe somebody gets pushed, or somebody gets punched, or somebody starts to cry. And the teacher will move into a problem at that point and try to establish safety. But the way the teacher will move in will be very calmly, and setting some limits first about physical safety. So, wow, I want everybody's body safe. I want everybody's body safe. And the teacher will get down to the child's level and get into more of a listening mode with curiosity about what happened. Wow, looks like there's a problem here. I'm here to help. I'm wondering what happened. Well, I was here first, and then he came over, and he said he saved the swing, but nobody said they saved the swing. I'm here, and it's my swing, and I want to use it. Wow, boy, so you want to use the swing, and you want to use the swing. You both want to use the swing. That sounds like a hard problem. So now the teacher is hearing both children, each of their perspectives, clarifying the problem and reflecting back what the teacher hears. And the teacher needs to stay very neutral here. Sometimes there's, you know, our urge on our part to solve the problem, to fix the problem, to say, well, I guess if you didn't say save, then it really is up to her to have the swing now, you know, and we insert our perspective, and it's really, really important not to do that. It's really important to be patient and wait and give the children time, and when the feelings are that high and there's hurting, we might have to establish safety a few different times, because something one child says triggers that other child again, and they push again. So now they push a child, one child pushes the other child down. Now one child is crying, and they're on the ground, and they're crying. I want my mom, I want my mom. Well, you're really sad and maybe scared. This is a really hard problem, and you want your mom, and the other child is still trying to get to that child, so the teacher might have to say, wow, I'm really trying to keep everybody's body safe, and I may need to hold you and help you keep your body and other people's bodies safe while we talk about this problem. But I'm really hearing you both want the swing, and it's really hard to work this out. And everybody's got strong feelings. So there's a lot of, you know, really, really trying to stay with the feelings as long as those feelings are coming out in very intense ways. And as you get through this process, which may include holding a child, may include comforting a child, may include at some point even having another teacher come over and help, depending on how it goes, there'll be a shift at some point, and you'll really feel like the listening may be complete, and it may have changed things and de-escalated the feelings enough so that the children might even move into actual solutions themselves. So you might hear, well, all right, you can have it first, but I want it right after you're done, okay? Okay. And then they've solved the problem. But if they don't get to that point, but you have a sense that that they really have moved through enough feelings, then you might suggest, well, I wonder where we're at now. You know, I wonder if people are ready to talk about what to do about this. Because now we're going to move into the thinking and the solution part of the problem. And but when children's feelings are really, really intense and they're really high in them, there really isn't the ability to think. And we have to keep that in mind and not rush them through this process. When we come to working out solutions, we really want the solutions to come from them. There's a very powerful feeling in solving your own problems. And this is what the experience that we want children to have, is that they can work out their own problems. They really can. They can come up with their own solutions. And when they come up with their own solutions, they're much more committed to those solutions. So we don't have to fix it for them. We don't have to see one child as a victim and one as a perpetrator and take sides. That does not move this process forward. As a facilitator in this kind of process, it's very, very important to stay away from things like moralizing or judging or saying things like, well, how do you think you'd feel if that happened to you, and things like that. There's a lot of lessons that children will learn from this process if they get to really just experience it for themselves. And they'll tell each other, you know, that you don't need to tell the child, well, you know, the next time you leave the swing, maybe you should tell somebody to save it for you. The other child will tell them. They'll say, you didn't say save. How was I supposed to know? You have to say save if you want the swing saved. So they'll work those things out, and they'll learn so much more from experiencing this process and having their hearts beat really, really fast for a while, and then be soothed and calmed by the teacher's presence, and by being able to work it through and being able to say to the other child, these are my limits. I don't want to be pushed. You know, if you want the swing, ask me. I don't want you to push me off it. I don't want you to push me on the ground. That's my limit. And these are very, very empowering experiences for young children. So we don't want to take those away from them. As they grow, as we see the children in the elementary side of school that have been doing this process for a long time, they really move into it so gracefully. It's just like second nature to them. It's not that they don't have any less intense feelings, because older kids have pretty intense feelings too about certain subjects, but they know how to use their feelings. And when children are being unsafe in their feelings expression, we have a lot of ways to help them redirect that. We'll let them punch pillows. We'll let them kick boxes and tear paper, and we'll guide them to that if their feelings are so strong and they're coming out unsafely, and just sitting with them and holding the space doesn't really help them move through it. So I'm going through, this is a process that we go through over and over and over again every day, and it's very familiar to us, and I'm really kind of going through it fast. So I know when we get to the question and answer part, you know, if you have any questions about it, I'm happy to answer them. And then I want to talk a little bit about how we can use conflict resolution at home. Because at school, it's often the facilitator model, but sometimes the problem is with us, too. The child just doesn't want to hear our limits. And that's more like what happens at home. We offer a lot of seminars and workshops to parents at our school so that they can practice these skills. We invite them to be at the school and observe teachers, because it's easier for teachers. The neutrality is a lot easier, I think, for the teacher than for us as parents at home, especially alone with our children. But it's the same skills. We're still encouraging deep listening for feelings, really trying to attune to the deeper message that the child is expressing. And a lot of times at home, you know, that's going to really come out in harsh ways. You know, they might be expressing, they might be needing you, they might be missing you, but what will come out is they won't listen to your limit. And so through the listening process, you can get deeper than just staying at the surface about the content of what the issue is. So again, listening and respectful limit setting are the tools, and I just can't stress enough how powerful the listening is. But at home, I know from being a parent of two children and being at home with them a lot, there are a lot more challenges. More of our feelings come into play at home. The conflict is often directed at us. We don't have as much time. We're often alone trying to work things out. Sometimes there are siblings and the conflict is between the siblings, or we're stretched between whose needs do we meet first. It's very, very difficult at home. Our feelings get triggered a lot, and the whole situation is a lot more challenging. So we have to really keep that in mind, that we can use this process as a tool when we're really available for it, but sometimes we won't be. And sometimes our needs might be stronger, and we might have to get to work on time, and we might have to really kind of quickly set a limit. And hopefully we can do that when we're calm and not angry, and it's important to try to express our limits before we reach like the end of the line for ourselves. So if I've got to get to work on time, I might need to rush my child in the morning, and I might need to say, you know I'm going faster than you want to go, and it's hard for you, and I see that it's hard for you. So I give some listening statements, but then I say, but I'm worried I'm going to be late to work. So I own the problem. It's my problem. I'm worried I'm going to be late to work. So I really need your cooperation and help. And and we can go out the door now, and you can walk out yourself, or I might need to carry you out. What is your choice? So we try to do that. And then we can even say more, like, I know there's not enough time for you right now. And maybe tonight when we both come home and we can have some quiet time, maybe we can talk together about how we can work this out better in the morning, because I know this isn't working for you. So we're setting our limit. We may be moving this along fast, but we're also really listening as much as we can to the child. Also, sometimes at home, our feelings get too activated. And, you know, we find ourselves getting angry, and we need to take a break. And that's something really important to do. And we might need our own listening time. We can always go back to our children and repair anything that we did. Maybe we yelled at them. Maybe we lost our temper. And we can go back and say, you know I was yelling a lot yesterday, and I wonder how that was for you. When we're ready to be in that listening mode again, you know, then we can let them know we're there. And if we just say, I wonder how that was for you, and we stop, we might hear more from them. Well, that wasn't okay with me. Well, I didn't like it. Well, that was really scary when you were yelling at me. Then we were available for the listening that we weren't available for earlier. So the repair process is really, really important. We're going to make mistakes. We can't be perfect. It's important, actually, that we're not, because children aren't perfect, and we don't want them to feel like they have to be perfect. And we want to model how to repair things in relationships, because we want them to be able to repair their relationships, too. So these are some things. I want to just say a few things before I finish. I mean, there's just so much I could say. I can't get to all of it. But just a few things about, like, what we find helpful and what we suggest sometimes. Like, when we get to an impasse in the conflict resolution process, which happens a lot when it's between our child and us, we get into a power struggle. I need you to do this now. I don't want to do it. Well, I need you to. It's bedtime. You got to go to bed, you know, and voices get raised and everything. And if we can realize we're in that power struggle, which sometimes we can and sometimes we can't, we can shift the energy in a few different ways. We can turn things into play. If it's about teeth brushing, when they don't want to brush their teeth at night, maybe we make a game of it. Or we say, oh, I'm just going to take all the toothbrushes and hide them somewhere in the house, and I don't know if you can find them. Well, now we've got a game. And they go, I'm going to find one. You can't take mine. Or I'm going to hide them with you. Or, you know, and it eases that whole inflexibility that we get into. If we have the time, we can just negotiate things. If it's bedtime and I say, well, it's bedtime now, and I say, well, I'm not ready. Well, when would you think you'd be ready? How much time do you need? What do you want to do before bedtime? So we can, and I'm sure you do a lot of this, you know, we can negotiate a little. And we can always own the problem if it's ours. And if we own the problem and we ask for their help, children love to be cooperative. And that sometimes really shifts it. So we're not saying, you need to do this, you need to do that, you better do this, you got to get your homework done. But we say it's our problem and we're stuck. And do they have any ideas that would help us? And some other things that sometimes help parents, I know we suggest these a lot at school. I mean, certainly what Patty says about getting your own listeners is absolutely important. Nobody can do this job alone, really. Some people are parenting alone all the time, and others sometimes, you know, if you are parenting with someone else and they can come in and facilitate when you're in the middle of a problem, that's great, but that's not always the case. So it's really important when you recognize what your triggers are. Maybe it's something when you've got siblings. Maybe you align with the older child more or with the younger child, you know, because you were the older child and expectations were on you. Anytime you start to see those things happening for yourself, or maybe you're getting a little more punitive and cranky, it's really, really, really important to get your own support. To process those feelings, to understand the dynamics maybe you were in as a child and how those might be affecting you with your own children. at school we do a lot of seminars and workshops, and we actually do a lot of role playing where the parent can take the child's role and in working out the conflict, and we role play the whole conflict, and it's really a wonderful way to get in touch with some empathy for your child, and also to get a sense of how your child might be experiencing you. Because when you're the child in that role and somebody else is the parent, you really begin to feel what that power imbalance is like between a parent and a child. And that's up to us to watch out for that power imbalance, because we are the ones with more power no matter what. And how we use our power and how we limit the use of our power with our children is really, really important to their development. And we also suggest, one more quick suggestion, we also suggest that parents have like a mush area or a mush box of things around their house. Like mush is our name at school for these safe outlets for anger. So we might have a box with, you know, metal cans that kids can stomp on, or plastic bottles, or roll up newspaper into soft swords and hit boxes with it. So we'll have those things handy. So when kids are in a lot of feelings, but the feelings are coming out unsafely, we can redirect them. And they might not always take that redirection, but often they will. And that will give them a chance to express those feelings, but not hurt anybody. I think I'll stop there, and I know we'll have time for questions. So thank you. Thank you all for listening.
Great. That was really very, very, very helpful, Judy. It's really helpful to hear how you frame the difficulty and frame the opportunity really for helping children get through their feelings so that they can own the solution, so that it comes from their minds and their hearts. And it's very, very helpful. Would you say something brief about the expectation from everybody when our child, you know, gets into it with another child, that the child who, you know, did the hurting or did the pushing or grabbed the thing should say they're sorry? I'd just like to hear briefly what you think about that. Because it's on parents' minds a lot, and if they don't make their child say they're sorry, they feel bad and people judge them. If they do make their child feel they're, you know, say they're sorry, they're not sure if that's actually helpful or what should, you know, what do you think?
Yeah, boy, that's a tough one. And, you know, I think it's really tough because you're not always in a situation where you know the parenting style of the other parent, or where you might be. And our parents talk about this too. You know, it's one thing at Play Mountain what's expected, but they're out in a park, or they're at a birthday party, or they're at grandma's house, or something like that. And people do have different expectations. But what I suggest to parents is, I don't really think it helps to tell children to say I'm sorry, or please, or thank you, or those kinds of things. I think we model those things with our children, and through modeling them, if I say to my child, I'm really sorry I yelled at you, I'll try not to do that again. I really don't want to hurt your feelings, and I don't want to scare you. We're giving them more of a genuine, authentic relationship, and that's the same with between the children. Children don't always feel sorry, and it's meaningless unless they really feel it. And that's what we're trying to get to in this process, is them saying what's genuine to them. So if a child might say to another child, I want you to say you're sorry for hurting me. And if the other child says, okay, that's part of the agreement they have between them, that's different. But for the adult to just say you're sorry, I don't think that really does anything to further the relationship. If I'm that child and I'm forced to say I'm sorry, but I'm still really mad, then, you know, I'm kind of resentful about that too. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't really mean it anyway. So what good is it to have a meaningless statement? Whereas, if they have to talk about the impact between them, that's what the process does. It says, when you push so-and-so, they cried, and you have to see that. And this process actually makes kids take more responsibility for themselves, because they're facing the person they did something to, and that person is saying to them, I didn't like that. Don't push me. That hurt. I won't be your friend if you push me. Wow, now the child really has something to consider. Well, I really want you to be my friend. Okay. Well, I pushed you because yesterday you said you wouldn't play with me and that hurt my feelings. Oh, now we're getting to something even deeper. And that's what we're trying to do with this process, is get to that. So when they do get to a point where they're like, let's play together again, that's where they are. Nobody's doing that out of coercion or force or anything like that. So I don't know.
Thank
Does
you.
That help?
Yeah, that's very good. I totally agree. I totally agree. I think that when children are harboring feelings, they can't feel for other people. They can't put themselves
exactly.
in anybody else's shoe. And so what really helps children to get to their way of repairing the relationship is to really listen to feelings all the way through, to make it be a longer cry if they can keep on crying,
yes.
to sort of stay out of their way if they're shedding feelings and saying what those hard feelings are, to not, it's kind of like not to be so verbal, not to be so asking questions or trying to probe, well, what happened then? It's like just to stop the probing and to stop kind of being, you know, being too verbal. Feelings that come mm-hmm. from the nonverbal part of the brain, and
right.
there aren't words to put to feelings. There's crying to be done to get rid of the feeling, but there's no way that they can describe the feeling. They can describe what happened, but
yeah.
they, you know, the feeling has its own, it is its own communication, and it doesn't need words. And I think a lot of grown-ups get all involved in say this or say that or tell me how you feel
mm-hmm.
or, oh, I see you're angry. And actually, there have been studies that have shown that when you name a feeling or when you ask a child to name a feeling, they
mm-hmm.
stop being able to release that feeling. In order to name mm-hmm. it, they move out of the nonverbal but deeply emotional part of the brain, which is really trying to release the emotional tension that's keeping them from thinking, and they're trying to please you by going into the part of the brain that does identify things with labels. They're trying to
mm-hmm.
do that to make you feel good, but it moves them away from the process of releasing the hurt, and that's the process that restores the thinking. And so I really try to, in what we're doing, what we call stay listening, which you call deep listening, I really try to encourage grown-ups to say very little,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
allow the feelings to be shed, and not try to guide it or pretty it up or label this or label that. It's really, because the labels shorten the child's ability to trust their own process of, you know, I can't say anything to you right now. I just have to sob. That hurts so bad, and I feel so insulted. And it's like they just need to go there, be there, show you. You know, everybody needs to receive that, and they just need to get it out, release it, let it go, get through it, so that they can be friends again. And if we ask them to label
mm-hmm.
things, or say they're sorry, or say what happened, or tell the whole story, that, you know, that can come later. It's like you can find out, if you really need to know what happened, you can find that out after the child has stopped crying. You don't need to know it
yeah.
while they're crying. You know,
absolutely.
There's no, and actually, you don't really even need to know what did happen. What you need to do is help the children resolve what happened, and the hurt that's inside of them from what happened. You actually don't have to know the details. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to know.
That's very
you just
true.
Have to support them to use this process. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think I'll just make a few little comments, because I think I love everything that you presented. I really, you know, there's a little, every here and there, there's a little kind of a cosmetic difference between what we might recommend and what you recommend, but just the
mm-hmm.
idea of noticing that when children are at an impasse, you know, for some reason, that the reason that they're at an impasse, either with you or with another child, is that they can't think. That when, you know, when children can think, they can find an alternative. And that in order to be able to think again, they need to offload the emotional tension that's there. And so in conflict, just finding a way, A, to keep things safe by setting a limit. And often when children can't think, you actually have to move in and bring the limit. You have to set the limit physically. So if, you know, children are coming to blows, you move in and you don't hustle one off to the next room or to the, you know, to the safe part of the classroom, because the more you do, the less safe it feels to children to unload the feelings that stop them from being able to think. So you just move them back enough so that if their arms are swinging, they're not landing on anybody. You let them use their bodies. It's like, for some reason, to get this hurt out, they really have to use their bodies. And if you keep them safe, so they can't hurt anybody, then they can have their process. They can get all hot and bothered and jump up and down and you know, wave their arms and reach to grab, and you just keep them from being able to get to the hair that they want to grab while they're that fully engaged in feeling really bad. And it'll subside. It's a storm. It goes away. So that's stay listening. But, you know, that you just coming in and just setting the limit that keeps everybody safe, and then sitting with two children who neither of whom can think, both of whom feel bad, and you have to sit with an ear, I think, the curiosity. It's like, tell me what happened. Why is it this hard? Is a really good entree, and then not pushing for the details, just the idea that you want to know, you know, supports children enough that they can cry and cry and cry while they try to, you know, spill out the story, or while they wait until they can spill out the story. So, and I think we think about it as time in. It's like giving a pair of children time in, where someone is going to pay attention until they can think again. Someone's going to be with them until their minds are operational again. And that will mean, you know, them deciding who gets the blue ball or who gets the first turn in the, you know, to be batter in the baseball game, or, you know, whatever the issue is. And I think the other one is that there is an intervention that I have sometimes used in groups of children that's really fun. It's not quite the careful negotiation. It's not kind of bringing children together necessarily to figure it out themselves. It's seeing that, you know, one child is doing provocative behavior that is off track, and other children are doing okay so far, but if this child who's doing provocative behavior continues, if a limit is not set, then, you know, the other six children involved are not going to be able to play their game. They're all going to get upset, and pretty soon we're going to have seven upset children, and right now we've got one, and that child is, you know, creating a difficulty for others. And when I see that happening, rather than trying to have a meeting and going through everything verbally, what I like to do, if I can, and this isn't something you can always do, it's like sometimes judgmental grown-ups will prevent you from using this tool, but it's great if you don't have, you know, grandparents who want you to be very strict and, you know, and are you only visit them once a year, and they're going to judge you badly as a parent if you don't, you know, do things they like, and you don't want them to, you don't want to leave with a bad taste in their mouth, so then you, I don't know, you muddle through. But it's called the vigorous snuggle, and that's where a child who is feeling disconnected and therefore trying to, and therefore is engaged in off-track behavior. So what you do is you move in and you get in and you make physical contact. You're friendly, but you're very vigorous. It's like so an example of vigorous snuggles, this illustration I can think of. I was trying to help my boys enter a pickup baseball game with about, you know, 7 and 8 and 9 year olds at the park one day, none of whom I knew. But there we were, and one of my sons wanted to play, and so he got into the game, and I was just kind of, they needed one more player, so I was in there doing the pitching so that the pitching could be a little bit better. And so we had a couple batters up, and they did great, and so we've got this game going with about 8 or 9 boys and one girl. And the girl comes up to bat, and the boys start catcalling. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, you can't bat. You're a girl. You know, it's like, oh, here we go, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what you want to do is, like, you know, give them your women's liberation lecture or, you know, say, you know, you're on the bench, you know, go sit down. But I don't know these boys, and they're, you know, they're not connected to me, so anything I say they're not going to really do. So what I did was I just ran over and I tackled the kid, the very first kid who, you know, who razzed her. And I just tackled him down to the ground and gave him a noogie. Like, oh, you can't do that to the batter. You know, that's no fair. The batter gets to bat. And I just rub him on the head with my knuckles, you know, and just roughed him around a little bit. And he laughed like crazy. And he stood back up. And as soon as he stood back up, another kid went, yeah, she can't bat. And I just ran over to him. And I gave, you know, wrestled him to the ground and gave him a noogie. It's like, oh, there you go, razzing our batter. She gets to bat without you razzing. You know, and what happened was all of the boys took a turn razzing her. And I just went over and I wrestled them one by one down to the lawn. And, you know, just kind of basically it's kind of a happy puppy kind of attitude. It's like, oh, you want me to come be with you too? Okay, you know. And then just running around. Yeah. And, you know, it took about 5 minutes, you know, of them all giving her gas. But I was, you know, and it's like, so she has to listen to that. But what's happening is that they're all laughing while the other guy is getting gas, and they're all kind of getting a chance to show me, yeah, you know, they've got that attitude in there. They've been kind of stung by that behavior infection that everybody in this culture gets sooner or later. And, you know, after about 5 minutes, they wanted to play baseball more than they wanted to, you know, to have me come and wrestle. And so it's like,
great.
You know, one of them says, hey, let's start playing. You know, like, okay, let's start playing. We're going to respect our batter now, right? Right. You know, and but I think there was one more, and I went and wrestled one more guy. And then it's like, oh, we want to play. And that, mm-hmm. I don't know, there's something about getting in, being playful, getting kids laughing. It's like they're off because they need connection. And you don't have to bring connection, you know, like a lawyer. You can actually come in and play with them. And that shifts the tone, and it exacerbates whatever it was that they were throwing out there for a while, because they want to be played with. They want to be wrestled. They want the contact. They want somebody to be affectionate and happy with them. But you're setting limits the whole time. And after you've done that a while, if you set a serious limit, they're more invested in you. You know, they feel better about themselves. You haven't insulted them in public. You haven't called them out as like a bad person. And actually, everybody's face is saved and you can go on. So I just wanted to add that as a tool. It's not exactly conflict resolution, but it's conflict. It's preventative maintenance, really. When you've just got one kid who's beginning to spin out, you know, you can tackle that child one way or the other, you know, with the other, you know, come on over, let's sit with me for a little bit. So that it could be serious time. And let's go sit together for a little bit. This isn't working out so well, you know.
Right.
Stay with me so you can figure out how you want to be in the kickball game. You know, they know they're off track. So you offer a little attention, a little time. You know, and you don't insult them in front of their friends, and then they can get connected and go back in and possibly have a decent game.
Yeah.
So let's open it to questions. Okay. Someone from Santa Monica, I'm opening up your line. Go ahead.
Is that me?
Mm-hmm, that's you.
Oh, okay. This has been really helpful. Thank you so much. I have quite a spirited 4-year-old guy who just, and I've been kind of practicing. I'm in a hand-in-hand group. I get the digest. I have all the booklets. I'm, in fact, reading the hitting, no more hitting thing now. And I have such a hard time. I think it was back to more what Judy was talking about of just the one-on-one when we're at home conflict resolution. So, you know, it's just really simple things like, you know, it's time to clean up and, you know, we need to get to school. And it's like, no. And then it's like, okay, well, I see it's hard for you to clean up. And so anyway, it's just like being met kind of with constant no's and constant, I don't know, just kind of coming up against me all the time. And I have a really hard, I know that when they're off track, they need to release feelings, but then I'm in this kind of flux where it's like, I can't always like get to the tears or to the, what the problem is, because I just, it's just not, it's just, I don't have time. So it's like, yep. And then I started setting some real consequences, like if you can't, you know, do this, then we need to, you know, I kind of have felt like I've slipped into this punitive mode, which I'm not into, but it just gets results fast, you know, and when I'm in a mode of like I have to get on with life and I have to do stuff, then I find that it's just not always, I guess, practical to do some of this stuff. And so I'm wondering, mm-hmm. what is the non-judgmental, non-violent way to kind of like get to, you know, get, I guess, I don't want to control his behavior, but I mean, sometimes we just have to go, or sometimes I have to do stuff. So
right.
how do I do that?
Yeah. Judy, right. you have thoughts here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in the moment, if you have to go, if I think the most important thing is to pay attention to your own feelings, because if you can act with limits and maybe even with direction, like, you know, we're going to have to go, and maybe you can give him 5 minutes or 10 minutes. You probably already do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think to make sure that you haven't gone too far so that you're angry when you're doing something. Because
right.
even if you have to say, you know, it's really time to go and you've had your 5 minutes before we go, so I need you to walk to the door in the car, or I can help you go to the door in the car. And then you do it. It's like you set the limits respectfully, you listen to their feelings. Sometimes you go back and forth between feelings and limit setting. Sometimes you listen to feelings more because it seems more feelings are coming out. But if it's safety, you might set the limit first and then listen to the feelings. But you do that and you act on your limit. And then they may cry. Then they may yell. Then
yeah.
they, you know,
yeah.
And then you, you know, even if you can't be fully available for that while you're in the car, you can be as available as you can. And what I was thinking about when you were saying these are recurring things, and 4-year-olds are tough, and it's a tough age because they're feeling very empowered, and but they don't know what to do with that power. They're just throwing it around at everybody. But what you can do is when there is a time that you have the time to really listen, you can say to him, you know, there's been some things that have been hard between us, and I'd like to talk about them. And then you're kind of setting up your conflict resolution process. But you're doing it when you know you have time to listen. And you can say, you know, I've been noticing that I've been saying no to you a lot. You've been saying no to me a lot. I wonder how that's been for you. What's that like for you? And, you know, and then you can maybe get to a place after some listening where you can say, what do you think we can do about this? Can we have some agreements? Now, 4-year-olds love to make agreements, and they break them over and over.
Yeah, but exactly.
You know, but at least you're including him in the process, and maybe you write down your agreements, and you say, this is how it's going to be when it's time to go. I'm going to do this. You're going to do this. And you can go back to that. Then at those times, like, remember we had that agreement. Now, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. I mean, it's over and over and over again with kids at 4 years old. But, I mean, I just remember with TV limits with my kids, I think we changed them about every week. And we would post them on the TV, and they were, you know, scotch taped to the TV so everybody could see them and everybody knew what they were. And, you know, then we'd have to change them. And we had agreements about cleanup, and then we'd have to change those. And we'd have family meetings every week, and we would pretty much change all our agreements every week. But the process was empowering to them, and it actually calmed me down because I
right.
knew I had a chance to say something too. So I don't know if that would be helpful to you.
No, I think, I mean, the piece that I kind of have been, I guess, looking for kind of permission to do, and the key would be for me to stay, and I'll, I know there's, you know, lots of questions probably, but I'll keep it short, but to stay calm in the thing, in the part piece where I need to, you know, I'm going to need to help your body, because he's quite a physical
yeah.
guy. So it gets
yeah.
quite physical, and then I'm gripping him, and then I'm like, oh my God, well, this is going
yes.
so south, when it's like, and I'm going to help your body because I see it's too hard for you to hear, you know, it's too
yeah.
hard for you to go right yeah. now or whatever.
Yeah.
yeah.
I have another little piece of input, and that is that oftentimes we adopt a certain tone when we're expecting
yeah.
trouble. and it comes into our voice, and it just covers our bodies. And for that, there's listening partnerships, and it takes a long time, actually, to shed the tone that comes over us when we're expecting trouble. And so they hear that tone in our voice.
I'm like doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And so the minute they hear that tone, they get re-stimulated, and all of a sudden they can't think. It's like, she's expecting trouble. Okay, you know, and then I can't think. So if you could just try a little project of one time a day when you are expecting trouble around a limit or something that has to be done, rather than just sailing into it and hoping it turns out okay and finding out that, of course, it won't, he's going to be his old obstinate self, to move in and try to communicate that information in some really goofy way. And so, for instance, we got to get out the door to the car, you walk in with 2 minutes, you know, to walk around the living room and go, oh my gosh, I have to get to the car. We are late. And then you start walking quickly to the car and you fall down flat on the floor. You know, it's like, wait a minute, what happened? I'm trying to get to the car, we're late. And then you walk again and you fall down flat on the floor. And you know, because it's goofy and because you're playing the less powerful role, he's going to go, whoa, this is different, you know. And so you get a little laughter going. It's like another way you could do it would be to walk in and go, it is time to go to the car. Who will come with me? And you make up a stupid little song, but you're being an opera singer. And, you know, so what you do is you're doing a little detour around the usual re-stimulation that in which both you're having feelings already of, gee, I know this isn't going to work. And as soon as he sees that, then his feelings come up. So just one time a day of, if it's around toothbrushing, you bring the toothbrush in and you bring the toothbrush around to his face and you go, hi there, Al. I am your toothbrush. I have a message for you. I'm so dry. I'm so needing some toothpaste. It tastes so good. Could you help me out, please? Could I have a little toothpaste and a little water? Could I feel your teeth again? I'd love to feel your teeth. And there's just something goofy. And, you know, it might not work, but A, you get to use a little creativity, and B, my guess is that it sort of builds relationship, and it kind of gives you a one time a day when you're learning to kind of step out of what happens on your end, and that's going to let him step out of what always happens on his end, you know, and who knows what will happen, but it's at least a little goal, just a little project of one time a day having a goofy way to say what the limits are or what the expectation is.
That's such great, I mean, these are both great, really, really good advice, because it's just so hard. Sometimes you're just so mired in it, and it's just so not funny.
Yep.
The last thing you want to do is you're like, I just want to scream. Anyway, okay, well, thank you so much.
That's where the listening partnership comes in. It's like, that's where you need a listening partner. You do need the place that you can scream and hurl insults and say all of the nasty things, you know, that run around in your mind that you don't say. It's great that you can control yourself there, but you need a relationship in which you don't have to control all that, in which you can just let it have its day. So.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, we can take one more short question. Thanks, Judy.
Oh, that might be me.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. I've got two young boys and they're 3.5 and nearly 2, so they're quite close together. And often throughout the day at the moment, they'll just sort of yell at each other. It's mostly coming from the older one, and he seems to be yelling at his brother quite a bit, whether it's he's taken a toy or they've taken a toy off each other or something. And I'm not always sure about what's happened, so I go over and sometimes I'll try to figure out what's happened, and I'm wondering, after listening to your talk today, whether it's best to just move in slowly rather than trying to figure out in words what's gone on.
What do you think, Judy?
Well, I think especially they're very young, and I mean, I don't even know how verbal your 2-year-old is. So I think maybe, you know, I'm not sure. If there's no hurting, if there's no physical or emotional hurting, You know, maybe just being near and saying to the older one, well, I heard some yelling and I just came over. And, you know, just maybe really just trying to listen to what that might be about for him. You know, I think when there's unsafety, that changes the situation a little in terms of having to set some limits and boundaries first. But,
you know, there might have been an arm swung or something. But
yeah, there might have been before you got there, or somebody took something from somebody. There's so much depth to sibling issues. It's hard to answer it quickly with a sibling, because and with them being very close in age, I think I would wonder, you know, that the 3.5-year-old might be having very similar needs for you that the 2-year-old might be having still, you know, like just still having a lot of needs for mom's attention and for being special and for being the only one. And I know Patty talks about special times, and we talk about special times at Play Mountain too, and as ways to, you know, give attention to children, you know, when you really can focus on them. And I think a lot of sibling interactions are to get the attention of the parent, and are the kind of jealousy and those kinds of feelings that are just so hard to express. One minute you love your sibling, the next minute you're really ready to just tear their hair off. And, you know, having a chance to be with your older one, maybe without the younger one, and wonder, be curious about what it's like for him around his little brother, and what are the things that happen that he doesn't like, and what are the things that happen that he does like, and, you know, just really allow him a chance to really say what his experience is like. I think it's a little harder for the 2-year-old to do that, but your attention and close proximity of your body to the 2-year-old is probably enough, you know, to get them going through their feelings. But it's hard to do conflict resolution with kids that young, but it's not impossible to do conflict resolution with kids that young, because we have kids 2.5 years old at our school.
Yeah, so maybe approaching it at other times, putting more focus on the relationship with them at other times around that specific moment.
Yeah. I think that the thing that I like to say to children when they are in an upset with one another, as I move in, I think what I'm trying to do is reassure them that they're safe. And so I bring my listening, I bring myself, and what I say to them is, oh, I see this is hard, you know, I see there's trouble here. I'm going to stay here until you guys can work it out. I'll be right here. Now, I know you can work it out. You know, and I just express faith that they can get back in tune with one another. And when you do that, it really, it makes children mad. It sort of intensifies the feelings, actually, because you are saying, it's safe, I'm here, I'm guaranteeing the safety. And it's saying, I know you can work it out. And as you say that, children feel like, this will never get worked out. I am so insulted, I never want to see him again. And just the, you know, taking a positive look at the situation intensifies the negative feelings, and they pour out faster. So it's kind of looks like you're making things worse, but actually you're making things safer. So that's kind of the message that I like to give one way or another, is I'll help you. You know, I'll be right here until you can figure this out. You know, I don't know what the solution is, but I'm sure that you can figure it out.
And Patty, if they're just sort of yelling at each other in this time, sometimes I feel like I need to get in between them, like physically in between them. Is that something that is helpful? Or?
You can, especially if being yelled at is scary for the little one. You know, you're trying to prevent fear from landing hard on a child. So you could physically get in between, saying, sweetie, I'm going to be between you and your little brother so he doesn't get too scared. You can keep yelling. But in general, you know, children are trying to get to crying. And I think physical touch helps the yelling turn into crying. affection, you know, just rubbing the hair back on their head, you know, just ruffling their hair a little bit, going, sweetie, you don't have to yell. You can just let me know what's hard. You know, just trying to offer some warmth and some physical contact that isn't full of tension can sometimes break the crying into where it needs to go, which is sweating and, I mean, break the yelling into where it needs to go, which is sweating and crying and trembling. And yeah, you know, you could put, you know, one on each knee, you know, making sure that they can't hurt each other by kicking. But I think just generally getting closer and embracing is can help the crying process get there faster.
Mm. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. Really helpful.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've come to the end of our time here. So, Judy, I want to really appreciate the quality of the information that you've brought us and just give you a chance to tell people how they can find you if they want more of what you know how to do and or more information about Play Mountain. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say quickly, like, we have a website. It's www.playmountain.org. Play Mountain's all one word. So you can find a lot on our website. We're on Facebook. We offer communication skills workshops in Los Angeles, and we would be starting them up again in the fall. And you can, you know, go on our website and contact us. And if people are interested in enrollment at our school, we'll be opening enrollment again in the fall, like probably to call around late September. We start school in early September. So those would be some ways to get in touch with us.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. And for what's going on at Hand in Hand, you can go to handinhandparenting.org and look under schedule. The thing I want to recommend that you take a look at is our No More Hitting course, which you can start on that in 3 minutes after you sign up for it. You get videos of me talking to you about helping children with the aggression that shows that they need to work on big feelings inside. You know, how to adopt this perspective as you do that so that you're pleased with yourself and your child actually gets some tension relief and gets to move out of aggressive behaviors. So it's a self-guided course. There's help if you want it, but you can do it yourself without a consultant to help. And it's available anytime in the comfort of your home. And we do have classes called Building Emotional Understanding. There's several of them starting up. At times that work for Europe, at times that work for Australia, and at times that work for various parts of the U.S. So you can just take a look at that on our online courses section. And I thank you again, Judy, and I just want to appreciate all of you who came tonight. Thank you for caring this much about your children and for all of the good work that you do unsung in your home that no one ever sees, but we know that you do it, and we know that, you know, your children are growing up, you know, with as much of your love as you can possibly shovel towards them. So thank you for all of those efforts. And Judy, any last words you want to say?
Yeah, well, I wanted to thank you, Patty, and Hand in Hand for all your good work, but I really want to thank you, parents, for joining us tonight. I just really appreciate your courage. I think it takes tremendous courage to parent this way. We have to look very deeply at ourselves and really grow and change. And it's what allows our children to flourish when we can parent this way. So I just really appreciate all of you. And any way I can be of help, I'm happy to be. So thank you. Thank you for coming tonight.
Yeah, thanks for your leadership, Judy. Okay, take care. Bye-bye, all.